Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. I'm Shu Hardy, joined as always by Derek Brissett, and just before the new 2024 MLR season kicks off, we have a very special guest joining us, the Chicago Hounds' own Lucas Rumble. Lucas, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to chat with you guys about rugby.
Fantastic. Because this isn't the first time you've been on, so that normal set of questions that we have can all be shown in that interview we had back in February of 2021. Oh, the time just flies, doesn't it? So if you want to find out any of the questions of where Lucas got into rugby, you can check out that episode. We'll link it in the description on our YouTube channel. But let's talk about playing for the national team, playing for Rugby Canada. You got your 50th cap back in November. Congratulations on that. And, you know, that was the tournament held in Spain. However, it's just been announced, literally in the past few hours, that Canada has announced the three men's 15s tests that they will be hosting this year so far. So we have Scotland and Romania in Ottawa and Japan in Vancouver. Now, it's always been a struggle to get news out about tests because we've, especially last year with the tour in Tonga, we found news articles from Tongan newspapers that were saying that, oh, Canada will be coming for pre-Rugby World Cup tests. And then we're waiting ages to hear something coming from Rugby Canada itself. I mean, as a player, how important is it to get these matches in advance?
It's huge. It's huge. And I want to start by just saying, Rugby Canada does its best to get everything confirmed and sorted. And I know they wait until everything's, a sealed deal before it goes out. As a player, you always want to know way in advance what's going on so you can plan your life about it. I'm currently even looking towards, 2025 right now, as I just got engaged in November and I'm trying to plan a wedding. So trying to balance, wedding planning with rugby is not easy, but I've seen plenty of guys do it before me. So getting the schedule out, super important. And I know they do give it to us when they can. I just wish it was maybe a slightly easier process.
Is there any rugby, culture rules for planning a wedding that you kind of have to take into consideration? I know hockey players, for example, their weddings can only be in July and August, to not mess with the season or a possible Stanley Cup run or something. But rugby kind of seems to encompass the entire calendar year. So how much effort is that to actually make sure we're not inflicting on the rugby schedule? Not to say that rugby is more important than your wedding, but
there's a fair bit that goes into it. But I know that the Wags put up with a lot of stuff over the years, and if they've stuck with you this long and they're definitely going to marry you, you should maybe throw in the towel on that one and just do whatever keeps them happy.
Fair enough. That's a good answer. Good answer. So obviously, as Stu kind of alluded to, the tests coming up this year, you got, as Stu said, Scotland and Romania in Ottawa, then Japan in Vancouver, USA in Los Angeles, and then depending on how those games go, a different opponent over in Japan for the new Pacific Nations Cup that's being revamped. How are you kind of feeling about that schedule, looking ahead to the opponents? What do you kind of make of the opposition that you have laid out in front of you now that you've seen it?
We have some great games. Scotland, obviously, an immense team. Something we'll be, keeping on the calendar and prepping towards. Romania, another great rugby nation. And Japan, they played even in Vancouver before at BC Place. So it's an exciting fixture list for us. I think it takes me back to kind of when I started playing in 2016 of – we have more than, four or five fixtures a year, at least on paper right now. So it's an exciting time. It's been since, I think the last time Canada had this many fixtures would have been the World Cup in 2019. So it's been a while since we've had that many games to really test ourselves and to improve as a squad. Cause it's a tough sled to kind of meet up for 3-4 games a year and try and get some real value out of it. It seems like not enough, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because this is the first international competition, or sorry, regular competition that Canada have been a part of since the Americas Rugby Championship. And, Uruguay and Chile, their unions made the decision not to take part in the Pacific Nations Cup, which is, their prerogative. And when you have that many players playing in Europe and they can't get released, it does kind of make sense from that point of view. However, it's opposition that, obviously a bit familiar with the USA, obviously the neighbors down south, and Canada did take part in the Pacific Nations Cup years ago, but times change, players come and go, and it's a new experience. But that opportunity to return to Japan for the first time since 2019, are there any nostalgic places you'd like to visit?
100%. I'll be going to they have like a chain ichi or ramen spot called Ichiran, and it is unbelievably good. So I definitely will be going to an Ichiran. If there is one in New York, so them departing from the league was a little tough in terms of food stop, but yeah, it's probably been sticking out in my mind since 2019. But Japan's a beautiful spot. It's something I'll probably go back to when I'm retired in my rugby career. Just, get around a little more because it's got so many different things to offer, so much good food, so much culture. So I'm definitely looking forward to getting back there.
Yeah, we'll look to see if we can get Ichiran to maybe open up a location in Chicago, just to just
In.
yeah, how much would that help with recruitment?
It'd be huge. Oh, it'd be huge. You definitely get all the boys from 2019 licking their lips to get involved.
There we go. So that's how we rebuild the Toronto Arrows roster through ramen restaurants in Chicago, I guess. Is kind of what I'm getting at here.
It. Good way to do it.
Fair enough. So obviously you guys also you're kind of talking about, how, it maybe is tough to like maybe build some momentum when you're only playing, a couple tests and stuff a year. You guys ended the year with two tests. You won the last one against Brazil. You know that you got Kingsley Jones, Phil Mack coming back as part of your coaching staff. A full slate of schedule kind of ahead. I'm sure you guys have, been at least I'm sure you guys have been like, in contact as you're all kind of gearing up for your MLR seasons in those respective cities. But like going into 2024, like where are you guys kind of at as Rugby Canada? Like, I guess maybe sort of mentally, obviously missed out on the World Cup, but you know, building towards the future, like what's the kind of like the mentality? What do you have to do to make a 2024 like a successful season for Rugby Canada?
I think we just still need to keep getting guys good quality games and keep building out our depth. I think you can take even like look at the England A, Portugal A kind of game that just happened. If you look at it just from a purely this team played this team, like why is the scoreline like that? And if you don't dive deeper into it, it's depth needs to be created for, tier two rugby nations. And the only way to get depth at the international level is to play more games and get more guys involved. So I think for Rugby Canada, myself, is to keep growing as a team and to keep getting more and more guys involved so that when it comes to qualifications and, games that need to be won, that there's really high demand within our team for spots, and that there's no one who's because they're available they're getting picked or this or that. It's not to say that's been the case in the past, but you need competition for spots. You need guys pushing each other to get better, and you need that week in, week out in a training environment.
So, I know we're going to get into the Toronto Arrows and your time there in a little bit, but obviously the Arrows were a massive hub for Canadian players within MLR. Unfortunately, that is no longer the case, but how does that kind of like, does that competition for spots kind of, does that look a little bit different to you guys now that basically all the Canadian players are like far more spread out than they were, say, in the 2019 build up to the World Cup when there was a lot of guys on the Arrows, or any of the other years that the Arrows have had like 20 to 30 Canadians and then a couple guys sprinkled throughout the league. Now it's kind of seems like there's like four or five Canadians on almost every team now. Does that like kind of change like how you kind of look at everybody kind of building depth and stuff within the professional record system in Canada?
I think it changes a fair bit in terms of, being on the same page, in terms of messaging, in terms of all these different things. Because now we, instead of having, maybe a majority of guys in one environment, we have a minority of guys in all different environments. So when we meet up, it's just so much more important that we're on the same page, that we have time for camps, that we have time to get together or speak over the phone, with coaching staff and players and leadership groups, just so we can be on the same page when it comes to the stuff in the summer. Just because we all be in these different environments, striving, for different things and in different ways, because every team plays it a little bit differently. But to be a good international side, you all have to buy into what you're doing when you come together.
Speaking of 2023 and the Toronto Arrows, it obviously wasn't the best season for the club as well, only getting one win against an opponent that we won't mention, considering they're your current employers. Two draws and 13 losses. In hindsight, is there anything that you wish that the club or organization had done differently? Even if things that are like beyond any individual's control, such as not having every single scrum half pick up an injury in 2022 or something like that?
It's a tough one. You can always, nitpick a season, especially from a position in the future and hindsight and all that. I think it was a good group of guys. I don't know if it was the right group of guys, for that year. I don't think because of injury trouble, we really got into a good enough groove. I think a good way to contrast it actually will be, I'll pull in a little bit of experience from this year so far. Is like the training squad we have here is like 37 guys, right? That's not including academy and this and that. So there's purely way more numbers this year than I've had years in the past, and it just allows you to train at such a higher level and push each other so much more. There were times last year where we would have, like 9 or 10 forwards who are fit enough to train. So if you had a poor lineout weekend, how do you fix that going against three guys? And
Right.
those were the kind of issues that you would have faced that maybe you didn't hear about, but it's just tough when you didn't have, the numbers and the bodies, and it's a salary cap league and all these things, and it's tough to recruit. And so I don't think, we had what we needed to succeed, and if everyone stayed healthy, we're probably having a different conversation.
Yeah, I remember the game against Utah is that I think the team flew out every available player they could, and then even before kickoff, three players had to be removed from the game because they weren't fit. And then, well, we all know how that game ended, just because exhaustion kicks in and you can only do so much. But yeah, I guess it is just a case of like making do with what you have, and if what you have is a terrible hand, then you just gotta deal with
I
it.
would say in hindsight, we probably could have like brought guys in earlier, but there's processes to that. There's, vetting guys. There's so many different things, and you can always make things better when you look at them from the future. It's how we react in the moment that matters. And not to say I wouldn't change anything, but I think people did the best with what they had.
You said like the Hounds, you got like 37 guys like in camp. Is that like I guess is that kind of like an indicator of like the league growing that you're able to have 37 guys in camp as opposed to maybe not having that necessarily available to you last year? Or are all 37 like the 37 guys that are available, like if they're all like kind of gunning for like MLR spots, I would imagine that kind of increases the level of like competition and stuff. But do you just kind of see that as like has like the size of the rosters that are available like during like practice and camp and stuff, has that been like growing like over the years in MLR, or is that kind of something that as the league's growing you're kind of seeing like develop a little bit as well?
I would say as the league's growing, it's keeping up with it. It's like I spoke about earlier. It's the only way to really get better throughout a week is to have the numbers and have the guys to push each other. Otherwise, it's just that by like a purely numbers game, you don't fix things. Like even you need 15 on 15 at training to really experience, reads and holes and how people defend and all these other things. Because when you're going, 15 on 10 or 15 on 8, there's just going to be space everywhere. And if you're defending against that, they're never going to break you or really stress you. So it's tough to replicate a weekend when you don't have those numbers. So like naturally, it's just going to keep heading that way.
Okay, so obviously, you guys, Arrow's kind of going into the off season. There's like a huge rebrand that happens at the start of the off season. The team starts bringing in a handful of new names, some exciting players from overseas as well. And then kind of what at least publicly sort of felt like out of nowhere the team folded. I heard you guys were actually like at like a practice or something when you found out, or at least when some players found out. But like how did you guys find out that the Arrows weren't going to be competing in 2024, and like what was kind of like that in like internal reaction like amongst the players?
So it would have been different for I think every player just the time it was. So it was about what was it like 8 days probably after that November tour. I myself had like taken a vacation to Scotland with my now fiance, and I had gotten engaged. Actually, the day before, I found out the team folded, which was unlucky, I guess. But it was just a call from Tim Matthews for me. He just rang me to let me know before it hit the news. And I think he was going about calling as many guys as he could. I think they had gone in search of capital quite late to keep the team afloat, and for one reason or another, it had leaked to somewhere, and it was starting to spread. So by that point, I think that would have been what, late November, or early December, they were starting to tell as many guys as possible. And then the next day, we had a team Zoom call announcing to the team what was happening and what was going on and the reasons why. So in my opinion, there was no indication from anyone or anyone in the management team that the team was in danger of going under or there was a risk of us not participating in the season.
Okay. Are you able to elaborate on the reasons why at all?
No, not in a concrete manner, to be honest. It'd be just as much speculation as yourself or Stu. I'm gonna assume it was a money issue because the capital call for MLR teams is late November. You have to show your funds by then. We obviously didn't have the funds, and neither did New York, so unfortunately we can't continue.
So obviously, preluding all this was the tragic news in at the end of August that Bill Webb had passed away. I think it's only immediate family knew about Bill's condition and the illness he was battling. But were you or were any of the Arrows or the staff made aware of Bill's illness at any point prior? And if not, do you remember where you were when the news came out?
Yeah, no one, to my knowledge, myself, I wasn't aware. I don't think any players were. And to my knowledge, no one in the staff was aware as well. So it was a shock to all of us. Yeah, I do remember I was just out west, my home in Vancouver, just a kind of a normal off-season day, to be honest, training, all that. And just picked up a call from, it was from Tim again, just hadn't heard from him in a while, so I found it kind of a strange out of the blue call, and unfortunately informed me that Bill had passed. So from that point on, I just again tried to reach as many of the boys I could and keep them, in the loop about things going forward and when we would next meet as a team.
Are you able to kind of speak to, like, as a player, like what Bill Webb kind of meant to the Toronto Arrows and even maybe to rugby in Canada as a whole?
Yeah, 100%. Bill was an amazing man for the sport. He was an amazing man, period. If you just look at how many lives he touched, how many people he employed, and how much he was doing in rugby to make it a better place. You can walk around probably hundreds of rugby pitches in North America and hear how people will fix problems and make national teams better and solve this and solve that and probably cure world hunger. But what you don't see a ton of is people actually putting their money where their mouth is and, people really stepping up and owning it and trying to make a difference. And Bill was that guy in Toronto and in Canada. He was a solutions-based guy. You could go to him with any problem you want, any feeling you wanted, and talk it out, and he'd have an ear for you. And he cared about growing the sport, and he cared about the people in the organization, and he really did care. So I think losing him and such an important piece in rugby in Canada, it's just been, I think, devastating for a lot of people.
I mean, I think like even from like our point of view, he was very like welcoming to us as like a podcast and like media and kind of allowing us to have like access to like the whole team and stuff. And you can kind of we always were able to like kind of see the passion that he had for like growing the Arrows brand and rugby in Canada. And I'm sure from like the player's point of view, you guys got to see that like tenfold compared to the small sliver that we probably knew.
He wore every win, every loss on his sleeve. He was in and around the boys. He was probably the happiest guy when we won a game, and the saddest of sad when we lost. So, he was right in it with us.
So, I mean, obviously, it was a bit of a difficult off season. I'm sure like as an Arrow, especially difficult for you guys. But the team was around since 2019. It's kind of had a bit of a wild history. Kind of quickly entering the league, had a unreal winning streak in the first year to make the playoffs. Second year COVID kind of hits and wrecks a pretty big maybe like what if year in Major League Rugby if that doesn't happen. And then you guys end up in Atlanta for a season, eventually coming back to Toronto. Bit of a wild history for the Arrows, but do you have any like what are some of your favorite memories of just playing for the Toronto Arrows over the past 5 years?
I think for me, a lot of the best memories come from probably the first or the second season. Before that team, there really wasn't anything professional, and the group of guys that, especially that first year, were all, Ontario Blues guys, and it was crazy just to see the group of guys who would, give up so much time driving and training, once or twice a week to go play the odd Blues game here or there, or the CRC games, all those things, to see a lot of them mature into a professional sport that they probably didn't think they'd get the chance to. And it really felt like we were building something in those first 2 years. Just like the Van Horn twins, having them around, J Mac, Andrew Ferguson, like all those guys I grew up playing men's rugby, junior rugby with, having them around and being able to play a sport for a living with them was a surreal kind of thing, and probably my favorite memories of it would be from those years.
Yeah, is that like a lot of just like you mentioned kind of like the boys on the team? Is that just a lot of like I guess the first time like experiencing like I guess all like the road trips that would come with being an MLR team for the first time, going to all the cities and stuff like across like North America, having some ramen in New York, I guess too, maybe, but or maybe not, because I mean maybe that was before you discovered it in Japan, I guess, technically on that timeline. Or did you
No,
go
there
to
wasn't. There's a good story there. Me, myself, and Pat Parfrey. So there's like a really good pizza joint as well, like John on Bleecker's, I think is what it is in New York. And we really wanted to do that and Ichiran. So post game, we ended up doing both of them instead of anything else. So, like, yeah, so those kind of memories, and that was with Pat Parfrey. So there's great memories sprinkled in probably in every year, but
Yeah.
I think just how it started for me, and you know how it kind of came out of nowhere probably makes it stick in my mind the most.
What MLR Road City has the best food?
See, like New York would have taken that for me. Like, to be honest, well, it's not a road city anymore, but Chicago's got really good food as well. I've been to a few restaurants like out now, and it's been really tasty. So maybe this is the year I discover the new city of good food in the MLR.
You know what? That's a smart answer. You got to endear yourself to the new fan base by like, hyping up like, what do they have in Chicago? Deep dish pizza? That's a
They
thing.
got
That's
deep
a
dish
Chicago.
pizza. Oh yeah, oh yeah. And then they have that show on Disney, The Bear. They got those like beef dip sandwiches. I've still yet to get one of those, but apparently they're quite famous.
All right. Speaking of Chicago and the Hounds, with the loss of Toronto and New York, it was emerged that a dispersal draft would take place. But according to reports, you signed for Chicago outside of the draft. So was that a case of Chicago reaching out to you reaching out to Chicago? How did that all come about?
So it's a case of a few different things and a few timing things. I actually hadn't inked my deal officially yet with Toronto. Myself and Tim were going back and forth a little bit on some things, which for me, my history is quite normal. I like to kind of focus on the Rugby Canada stuff in November, you know, and if we haven't come to agreement before that, I'll sign after. But we had agreed on principle, basically everything but the pen stroke had been done. So that allowed me to basically be listed as an alumnus player in the league because I hadn't signed anywhere. And Will Maggie, who's working for Chicago now for the Hounds, who I've played against a few different times on a few different teams, actually reached out and asked if I was retired or not, or if I was still interested in playing quite quickly after everything had happened. So I guess they reached out to me first, and it kind of got the ball moving from there.
It's interesting to hear how the league works when it's sometimes hard to get certain information. Like, I had no idea like alumni players were a thing in MLR.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I guess it's like their word for retired, because I guess if I hadn't signed anywhere, I had been in the league for long enough to my rights wouldn't have been owned, and so I don't know how that works, but I guess the GMs and different people around within the league probably have more access to some of those files.
So basically you signed with Chicago out of the dispersal draft because you technically didn't sign with Toronto, and
Correct.
that kind of allowed you to, I guess, maybe go anywhere you want, but you landed in Chicago. So like, what was there any other like kind of draw to joining Chicago, or were you kind of maybe assessing any other options and stuff as well?
Yeah, I definitely was looking at other options. You know, Toronto was my home away from home, I guess now is where I grew up, where I was born. I live on the west coast of Vancouver now with my fiance. So that played a factor into some thinking and some chatting with some other teams. But I think for me, Chicago's facilities are top notch. Chatting with Will and Sam and James English, it seemed like they'd made a ton of great moves in the off season. It seemed like they were bringing in the right guys, you know. I asked questions around training and things like that about having enough numbers, and they had the right answers for those. So it seemed like a good fit for me for this year. And so, you know, I jumped at it when I had the opportunity.
Have you like talked to any of the other, like, say, maybe former Arrows, or even, I mean, now that you're on the Chicago Hounds, a couple guys from New York landed there too. Like, What kind of was that immediate process of guys trying to maybe figure out if they're going into the dispersal draft or not, or like, trying to, sign with other teams? Obviously, we know, like, from the Arrows' point of view, you got a lot of guys landed elsewhere in MLR. There's a handful of guys that look like they're heading to the Vancouver Highlanders and maybe some other, setups like that. What was kind of, from like the player's point of view, that whole like process of trying to like figure out where everybody's going and what was, if there's any insight on what it might have been like for guys that did actually go through that dispersal draft?
So I think it was quite tough. They're not knowing where you're going to end up is tough. And to be clear, the league did have things in place where guys weren't forced to go to, spots they were drafted. There was ways to, talk to other teams at certain time points and things like that. So it wasn't like they were forcing guys into situations that they didn't want to be in. But it's tough. You're so late in the year, you set yourself up to be like, okay, I'm in Toronto, I'm ready to go. This is going to be the year I'm ready to build again, and it just gets ripped away so late. And then to get put into a draft and to try and figure out where you're going, yeah, it's tough. I feel really for the international guys who are at Toronto the most, I think, just because of the time in the year and the fact that they fill up an international spot, probably some more cap space than teams would likely be looking at, and all these other things. I think a lot of them didn't get picked up just based on that. If you're a GM from a team, you're definitely planning, okay, these are going to be my international guys for the year, et cetera, et cetera. It's not something that has a ton of wiggle room when it comes so late in the year.
Yeah, I believe from the Arrows, and I believe Waito Kia is the only player that was signed by the Arrows, that or international player
There was
signed.
also Talu Tasi Tasi.
Oh yeah, Tassie ended
Went
up going.
to Houston,
Yeah,
yeah.
and then yeah, so only, I guess, out of all the international players on Toronto, only two of them seem to have landed in another MLR city. So I guess that. Which I guess too includes, like, obviously, like, yeah, the guys had a new coach coming in from overseas and stuff too. So I guess that all kind of adds to sort of very, like, I guess, unfortunate situation and overall for, I guess, every player. And I'm sure, like, have you talked to New York guys as well? As like, were they kind of, I guess they're, I'm assuming they were just kind of in the same situation and maybe just kind of had the same general kind of feelings and stuff like towards that.
Yeah, similar. It was similar feeling, a little bit different for some guys. I think they had more guys with families and things like that, so a little bit more to think about when it comes to moving cities and teams and that sort of thing. But yeah, very similar, very last minute, very, unexpected. Like I was working out with Andrew Coe's at New York at a similar time, right? So it's you'd see him in the gym, be like, any news, any this, any that, you talk to anyone. So it was an odd, I guess, odd off-season job hunt when you least expected it.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess so, like, this all kind of went down, like, I guess the end of November into December was like the dispersal draft, and then like all the signings and everything start coming out from that. In January, the US are the United States, like, Rugby Players Association announced that they kind of reached a deal to like begin working with the MLR. What are, like, do you have kind of any like thoughts on MLR players forming a union, and like, is there kind of a lot of things that you guys are like looking for, like, out of, all the, the dispersal drafts and expansion drafts and stuff that have happened throughout the league? 'Cause that kind of seems to be the time where the USRPA has been the most vocal.
Yeah, I think like to be frank and open, like I was the players rep in Toronto for the union. So I think it's a thing that is, a good thing for both the league and players. To be honest, like some of these happenings are inevitable in the way that they've gone. Like you're not going to stop a death. Or all these other things. You can't stop that union or non-union. For me, it's about what's in place. What are the standards? What are What do we expect? Because right now it's been kind of a case by case type of thing, and I think the league has managed a lot of them well. But when you have, a group of players who want to be involved in those conversations and want to have a say in those, I think having that representation, that union, just lets things flow a little bit easier. And in terms of what we want, it's not like we want giant pay increases and things like that. Sustainability in the league is probably first and foremost what we want. We want to have jobs. We don't want to, stop doing what we love to have to pick up a 9 to 5 or a labor job or something like that. So I think success of the league is, paramount in our mind as a players union, and just helping guys out in situations like this, having some sort of standard which says you get XXX if, this happens. So those are the big kind of ticket items. And, I doubt I'll see the benefits of it in my career because it's a tedious thing that requires a lot of back and forth. But by the time I'm retiring, maybe something's in place, and hopefully that adds to the sustainability of the league.
So turning to the current season and the preseason that you've experienced, because obviously being with the Arrows, going from the Ontario Blues, there's like the sense of familiarity, and there's the like, oh, let's go to the Raptors game, or let's go to a Leafs game, or something like that. But this is your first MLR preseason outside of that familiarity. So, being the outsider that's come to the new team, how has your preseason gone with that approach?
It's been awesome. It's been different. It's been new. I probably haven't been on a new team since 20, 17, 2018, with some of the Arrows stuff and the new guys coming in there. So for me, it was a change up. But I really enjoyed having a different perspective on things. Not being in a leadership position as well lends me to looking at things through a different lens, looking at things differently, experiencing things differently. The guys here have been extremely welcoming. The organization has done a really good job at bringing guys in and making sure they feel welcomed. I'm actually living with Mason, so Mason Flesh, so things aren't
Nice.
too different for us, which is nice to have, a familiar face to come home to every day. And Jason Higgins moved here as well, so there's another familiar face. And then, you've played against these guys for years now, so it's not like I'm foreign to anyone here. It's just been new and exciting for me, and I've enjoyed a lot of it.
Yeah, I was actually kind of gonna ask that. It's like, because obviously Flesh landed there, and Higgins, who I guess is obviously a Rugby Canada teammate. He's a former Arrow. He's got a stint elsewhere in between Toronto and Chicago. But like, what's that kind of been like? Kind of like reconnecting with those former teammates and stuff in the new city. Obviously, you guys said that you're living with Mason Flesh. So like, kind of like what's the whole the Canadians in Chicago kind of experience been like so far?
Been great. It's been great. We went out to dinner the first night we all got here and just caught up. Get a few maple syrup jokes, a few A's, a few what are you all about from the boys. A few of the guys, Luke Carty even loves a good Trailer Park Boys reference. So they've definitely made us feel right at home. And we all see each other, like Jason and Mason and stuff, in the summer and November and stuff like that. So it's not like we're that far removed. It's just a different city and a different time. So it's good to catch up with old friends, I guess.
So making a Trailer Park Boys references makes you like 30% Canadian at least anyway. So I guess we can maybe count Luke Cardi amongst the Canadians and stuff. See if we can.
He's got a lot of them, so he definitely
Yeah, there we
watches the
go.
show.
Oh, we need to like work that into World Rugby. Be like, that's the eligibility criteria, how many Trailer Park references you can make, and then we'll see if we can get them up here for Canada sometime.
Definitely get a lot more boys because I think the show is quite popular.
It is popular. It's either going to be that or Letterkenny at some point. Maybe the
Yeah,
end.
it's very true. Very true.
So like on the pitch, I guess, like how has Obviously Sam Harris coach team. Chicago kind of made some big additions this year. Obviously yourself, Mason and Jason are included in that. But like the team on paper looks much improved from last year. And like, how are you guys kind of feeling going into the 2024 season? How's camp been going? And you got a big matchup with Miami this week.
Yeah, I think we're feeling great. I think for us this week, a lot of the focus is like on ourselves and improving. There's obviously not much tape on Miami out there as a new team to the league. So I think, sharpening up what we see as our identity. And we've brought it like my or sorry, Chicago brought in Rob Weber to coach the forwards, who's from the Jersey Reds. So big set piece team. Lots of lineout, lots of scrum. So from a pack perspective, that's definitely been a huge focus for us in the preseason. And the nice thing is we've had enough numbers to really go at each other and have some hard days. So it's been, I would say, a tough but fair preseason. Lots of hard work has gone into it, and I think we're going to use this week to get humming and get things right for Sunday.
Yeah, and like what kind of like obviously, as I said, like Sam Harris team, former obviously Austin coach, a lot of guys from like Austin and LA were there last year in the first season and stuff. What's kind of like the Hounds like play style and stuff gonna be like this year? What are you guys trying to implement as you prep for round one?
So from last year and from some of the games, you could probably tell set piece wasn't huge with the Hounds, and there was definitely room for improvement there. So I think that's been a huge focus for them in the off season and for us, during preseason. And I think we want to be an exciting team that plays, a fast, expansive, game of rugby, to not sound too cliche. We also want to be defensively, very physical, very confrontational, and just really outwork and try and dominate teams through that physical, hard work kind of mentality. Almost that dog mentality. We got that dog in us.
Is that the marketing slogan, the Lucas Rumble
It
marketing?
could be. It could be now.
Yeah, Lucas Rumble, flanker slash director of marketing.
Yeah. So obviously we mentioned that Miami is how the Hounds kick off the 2024 season. Are there any venues or locations that you're looking forward to visiting for this season?
I think if I wasn't on Chicago, I would have said Chicago. I really do enjoy their stadium. It's grass, it's heated, it's nice on the joints. So it was very nice treat last year, even though it was, snowing and sleeting. It looked miserable, but at least the ground made you feel good. I think for me, the best stadium maybe in the league could be Utah with that view. You're up in the mountains, you're surrounded. It's tough to catch yourself sometimes, not just staring off into the distance and looking at the snow-tipped mountains. So I'd probably say looking forward to that Utah trip and getting back up to see those sights.
I did just look up if Miami has an Ichiran, so unfortunately you are out of luck on
I
that one. So it's
know.
Well, you reacted to that like you know the precise location of every single one of these restaurants, though.
In North America, I'm pretty sure it's only in New York,
Only in New York. Oh, that's very
which is
unfortunate.
disappointing. Yeah, very disappointing.
But yeah, you did mention though, like with Miami, like it's there's no tape on them. They got a handful of MLR vets. They got including O'Leary, Dutoit, and Oideman from the Arrows. And they got a couple guys that have played pro in Europe, some Uruguayan guys. Is it tough to prep for a team that nobody's ever seen before, or it does it just kind of go back to what you said? It's like doesn't really matter what they do and just focus on the Chicago Hounds.
Yeah, I think, prepping for teams week in, week out, you can tweak strategies here or there or try and exploit some weaknesses, but they could shift completely everything they're doing, and your prep could get thrown right out the window. So if you can tighten up yourself and really own, your area of things, it then becomes a game of reactions and who can beat people one-on-one or in these different kind of scenarios. So for us, when you don't know a lot about a team, I think the best thing you can do is focus on yourself and really make sure everything you're doing is at 110%.
What are kind of like the Hounds like goals and stuff for this season? Like, what do you guys have kind of been talking about as far as like what you think this team's capable of accomplishing in 2024?
Besides the obvious of lift the shield, because
That's
I feel
a
every team's
classic,
going to say
isn't it?
that.
That's a classic. If you don't say lift the shield, it's probably a bad look. So I think that's why everyone goes right to it, right? Obviously, that one probably been one of the first things we've talked about. But from that, it's just about building, competition and performances week in, week out, and really building a strong identity as a pack. Playoffs is something I think is, something we definitely want to be in. And I think seeing how preseason has gone and the group of guys we have, I see no question in it. I think they have the right pieces here. It's whether we can click and get things rolling early on.
You know what, you now that you kind of actually mentioned playoffs, it just kind of got me thinking back to something we did kind of talk about earlier in the show with Rugby Canada. Those games against Scotland and Romania are all in July, so it's kind of looking like there might be a break in the middle of the playoffs. Like, how do you guys kind of feel about, maybe playing some like hard MLR games, like, maybe some battles for postseason positioning, going to play international tests to come back and play like the three like biggest games of the year in the MLR season?
It's tough. It's mentally you're gonna have to be able to, balance a few different hats and balance your emotions and motivations, because they're gonna be completely different in terms of, one's a professional league and one's playing for your country. I think it's exciting. I hope it's an issue that late in the year, right? It's probably a good problem to have if you're worried about, leaving a team and having to come back instead of it. For some guys, it could be their end of the year, right? So for me, I hope it's a problem I have to face, and I hope I'm able to kind of take the Chicago Hounds hat off and put the Rugby Canada one on with ease.
Well, that game coming up against the Miami Sharks and the Hounds will be taking place on March 3rd at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And anyone who wants to watch can be able to do so on the Rugby Network. And I'm sure as well as us, there'll be many former Arrows fans that'll be cheering you guys on. And if you want to watch any of the MLR games this weekend, they will be on the Rugby Network. The Sevens continues after the stop in Vancouver. It'll be hosted in Los Angeles, and that'll be available on Rugby Pass TV. The Premiership and URC continues on Sportsnet, and the Premiership Women's Rugby continues on the Rugby Network as well. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out more on our website, larougerugby.ca. You can also find our podcast on Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. We also have a YouTube channel at Larouge Rugby with episodes of the podcast, so make sure to like and subscribe and hit the bell notification to stay up to date with all our videos. We're also available across social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all at Larouge Rugby. Lucas, where can people find you on social media?
And much simpler, just I'm on Instagram at Lucas Rumble. You can give me a follow. I'm not very active, but I'll probably follow you back.
And Derek, where can people find you?
At Preset the Jet, across all social media networks. And yeah, Lucas, I mean, like, we're always former Arrow, always going to be cheering for you this season. You're also on my fantasy team, so definitely cheering for you even more this season. Please keep that in mind. Don't let like Billy Meeks steal like a breakdown steal from you. Need those points. Push guys out of the way, make tackles unnecessarily, fly around the pitch. Looking forward to watching you play this year.
Thank you very much. I'll do my best to get those numbers up.
Thank you. I appreciate it a lot.
You can also find me across social media on Hardman, spelled HRDMAN. Well, that's where we're going to end this episode. Lucas, much appreciated. Thank you so much for joining us. Derek, thank you for joining me, and thank you all for joining us for another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.